So. Sorry, I didn't catch any of that. Could you just repeat that? Whew. All right. Good morning. Nice to see everybody. Quick poll. Anybody sunburned? Yeah, yeah. I recently got a new haircut, so SPF 50, my friends. That is the way to go. Non-negotiable. Well, thank you, my friend, for that kind introduction. I hope you've enjoyed our series so far. We've been talking through the book of Ephesians, and today we're going to pick up right where Jason left off last week. We're going to be in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 11. But before we get there, I want to recap. I want to provide a little bit of context because I never assume that everybody has listened to every one of our messages, that everybody's in on the reading plan. So if that's you, never fear. We're going to catch you up a little bit, so we're all going to be on the same page. So like I said, in the last 3 weeks, we've hit the first chapter and then the middle of the second chapter. And as a refresher, we call this the book of Ephesians, we being humans today. We call this the book of Ephesians, but this was actually not written as a book. As we said the last couple weeks, this was actually a letter. In the same way that you would write a letter to somebody, there was a guy way back named Paul. We refer to him as the Apostle Paul. He wrote a letter to this group in Ephesus. So he wrote this letter, and he never, I can't imagine that he knew that it was going to be a book of the Bible, but he wrote it as a letter. What was interesting is, doing a little bit of research, this is known as one of the most significant epistles in the New Testament, because Paul, I didn't actually know this, Paul was actually in Ephesus for 3 years. It was one of the places that he spent the longest in his missionary journey. So when he wrote this letter to this group of people, this was a loved group of people. He cared deeply about the church in Ephesus. So as you know, JR kicked off the series, our senior leader, and we started by looking at how Paul was addressing the church, and he was reminding them, because we all need reminding of things sometimes, right? He was reminding them of the blessings they have in Christ. He talked about how they've been adopted, how they've been redeemed. He talked about inheritance. And again, this was written to a group of Jewish people. So this resonated with the Jewish understanding that they were God's chosen people. So that's a lot of what chapter one was. And then Jeff was so kind enough, he reminded us that in this opening of this letter, Paul prayed for the believers to have wisdom, to have revelation. But I love this expression that they would have understanding of the hope of their calling. Man, I could literally stop right there, because I don't even think I have that. Paul said, I pray that you have understanding of the hope of your calling. And he talked about God's inheritance. And again, he drew back to, this was God's plan all along. You are a chosen, you are a select group of people. Well, then last week, Jason gave a great message. How many of you were here for that? Yeah, fantastic. And Jason reminded us where Paul, he was still talking to the Jewish folks, and he said, he was talking about this idea of being transformed from being dead in your sin to alive in Christ. And Paul was talking about this idea of grace and salvation through faith and the creation that we as believers, we were created for good works. Which brings us to today, verse 11. Let's go. My wife gave me a challenge that I couldn't fit the words let's go into a sermon. Just did it. All right, so that is the first time in my life I've ever said let's go. There's the second. All right, so verse 11. So now we're all cut up. We understand that Paul has started this letter. He's addressing the Jewish people. He's reminding them of their inheritance. He's reminding them they are a chosen group of people, a chosen plan by God. And now verse 11, I absolutely love this passage. I was just kind of like asked to speak on this, but I love this passage because verse 11 is where the story takes a little bit of a turn in this letter. Because up to this, like I have this, you ever, when you read the Bible, do you ever have the, like this mind's eye thing going on? Like you're imagining the situation. I always do that. Like whenever I'm reading, I imagine like what the room's like. Is it big? Is it small? Is it cold? It was always small and it was always hot. In my mind's eye, chapter 2, verse 11, I picture somebody reading this letter. They're unrolling this papyrus scroll, and they're reading this letter to a group of people. Most of these people are Jewish people. who are listening. And I just kind of imagine through chapter 1, through the middle of verse 2, the Jewish people, I kind of imagine them nodding, you know, because Paul is saying a lot of things like, you know, remember your inheritance. Remember, you've been adopted through Christ. Remember these benefits you have. And I kind of imagine the Jewish people saying, yeah, that's good. That's good. Because remember, this is their boy, Paul, right? He was there for 3 years. Now, what you need to know, that was 5 years ago. He stayed there for 3 years, but it's been 5 years, so he's been to Ephesus. So they know, most of them know Paul. So I kind of imagine them nodding, maybe patting each other on the back, saying, yeah, this is a good word, brother. This is a good word, good word. Then in verse 11, there's the start of a shift. And again, in my mind's eye, this didn't happen, but if Paul were there, if this wasn't a letter that somebody was reading, if Paul were there, I picture him speaking to the, bless you, I picture him speaking to this group of people, but then in verse 11, I picture him turning his head, because now we're gonna address a different group of people than has been addressed so far. And this group of people, they're referred to as the Gentiles. And so as a reminder, the Gentiles, if you've never heard that term before, the Gentiles referred to a group of people who were not Jewish. By definition, they weren't Jewish. And simply put, the Gentiles were outsiders. But as I said in verse 11, we're gonna take a turn. So verse 11 says this, therefore, therefore, remember that formerly you who are Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves the circumcision, which is done in the body by human hands, remember that at that time you were separate from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel and foreigners to the covenants of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. Paul, at this point, he's reminding the Gentiles, well, I mean, he's reminding everybody, really, that they were once outsiders, that they were separated from God, they were separated from his promises. And I mean, the Gentiles, clever title, they were literally called the uncircumcision. I wonder who came up with that. Clever. So as I dug into this, I was curious because, man, there is some strong language. I mean, this is vivid reminders of like outsiders, foreigners, strangers. This is not a warm and fuzzy. So I started to do some research, and I wanted to see how deep this rift went. So I have a great Bible study, or a great commentary at home. It's one of my favorites. It's called The New Daily Bible Study by William Barclay. And he says this, listen to this. The Jews had an immense contempt for the Gentiles. Listen to this part. They said that the Gentiles were created by God to be fuel for the fires of hell, and that God loved only Israel of all the nations that he had made. It was not even lawful to give help to a Gentile woman in childbirth, for that would be to bring another Gentile into the world. It gets worse. The barrier between Jews and Gentiles was absolute. If a Jew married a Gentile, the funeral of that Jew was carried out. Such contact with a Gentile was the equivalent of death. Even going into the house of a Gentile made a Jew unclean. That's messed up. Can I just say that? I mean, I'm sure we all have people in our life that we don't see eye to eye, or this person's annoying. I have never once said in my life, you were born to be fuel for the fire of hell. That's intense. That shows you how much of a disdain and hatred there were between the Jews and the Gentiles. Again, this division was marked by the physical sign of circumcision. That is like the dividing mark. So there's another source that I love. The Life Application Study Bible says it like this. Pious Jews, the circumcision, considered all non-Jews, the uncircumcision, ceremonially unclean. They thought of themselves as pure and clean because of their national heritage and religious ceremony. I mean, that's honestly hard for me to even read, because imagine, I mean, again, mind's eye, imagine what it was like. You lived thousands of years ago. Imagine that you're a Gentile for a second. Imagine what it had to have felt like to be a Gentile in that time. Separate, excluded, foreigners, strangers. I mean, the passage that we just read records them as hopeless. Now, I mean, I'm gonna conjecture here for a second, but I'm gonna conjecture that there were some Gentiles who were just fine not being included. There probably were some that were saying, you know what, that's you do you, I'm gonna be over here. But I'm gonna say, for the most part, we just have to imagine what it had to have felt like for this group of people to have this described of yourself, hopeless, without God, strangers, foreigners. Because when I think about it, I think there was pride on both sides of the situation, honestly. I think the Jewish people could have been prideful for their faith and their traditions because that elevated them above everybody else. They could see, I'm better than you. But then the Gentiles, they could be prideful for trusting in their achievements, I mean, trusting in their power, their position, whatever, because that's what pride does, if you think about it. Pride, by definition, it blinds us to our own faults. If I'm prideful, I don't have any faults. And if I'm prideful, I'm gonna magnify your thoughts. That's what pride does. I'm better than you. I don't have any faults. You have all the faults. But still, I've just been caught by this thought this week. What did that feel like to the Gentiles? Last week, our friend Jason talked about a memory resurfacing while he was mowing the lawn. And I didn't have any memories surface when I was mowing the lawn. Kind of wondered if I would. But as I was preparing this, especially that last part, I remember a time that I felt really excluded. And honestly, I have forgotten about this for like the last 30 years to the point I don't even think my wife knows this story. Ooh, spicy. If you weren't listening, you are now. So I spent my initial elementary years in Helena, Go Central School. And then we moved to East Helena. And I remember, I remember this so vividly. I remember the first day of school, but it wasn't the first day of school for everybody else. It was just the first day of school for me. The funny thing is, man, I really tried this week, you guys. I tried so hard. You should be proud of me. I tried remembering what grade this was, but I don't remember. What I remember was I remember what shirt I had on. It was this fabulous red and black bowling type shirt. Of course it was. I remember going into that school and I mean, all my friends were at Central. So if in case anybody's not from here, if this is your first weekend in Helena, let me tell you something about middle school back or grade school back then. Helena did not talk to East Helena. There was a great gulf between those two. And so I showed up to school. I didn't know a single person. I knew nobody. And I'm a pretty extroverted guy, but I didn't know where the classroom was. I didn't know where the bathrooms were. I didn't know anything. What do you think happened at lunchtime? Yes. It's the scene that's in 1,000 movies. And pretty much the entire plot of Mean Girls. I sat by myself for lunch. I wonder if, this is a little bit of therapy for me this morning, so I wonder why, like, I can count on this hand how many times I've eaten a meal alone. And I wonder if, that's interesting. Okay, somebody can pray for me afterwards. So, you're right. I ate by myself at lunchtime, and I remember I got up, went outside to go to recess, and, you know, I went down and put my tray down where the trays go, and all of a sudden I noticed there was this girl walking towards me. No, it wasn't Leslie. Just, I'll spoil that. There was this girl walking towards me, and I'm kind of doing this thing, and I remember she was cute. And so I did the natural thing, what any male would do back then. I looked down. And I'm watching her out of my peripheral vision because what I'm doing, kids, let me tell you, I didn't have the freedom and the security of looking at my phone, pretending to scroll. I didn't have that back then. We barely had electricity. And so I'm waiting for her to pass. I'm just catching her out of my peripheral vision. And then she stops right in front of me. So I look up and she says, "Hey." And so I said, "Hey." I didn't know what was gonna happen. I mean, like, was she gonna invite me out to recess? Is she gonna ask me where I'm from? So she looks at me and she says, "You have a hall pass in your back pocket." "Thanks." And she says, "You're welcome." And she smiles at me, she walks away. And now I wonder, was she looking at my butt? In that simple moment, I mean, that was, I've been on the earth for a minute. In that simple moment, that was a long time ago. And in that simple moment, I didn't feel excluded. I wasn't thinking about the pitiful chicken nuggets that I ate by myself. I felt included in that moment just because somebody took the time. She didn't have to tell me there was a hall pass in my back pocket. I would have figured it out, maybe. But in that moment, I didn't feel excluded. And I want to ask you this morning, here we are, present day. Have you ever had that feeling of exclusion? Maybe you didn't get invited to the thing, or maybe you found out you weren't part of a group text, or maybe somebody's telling a story or a joke, and then you walk up and the conversation stops. That's pretty rough, isn't it? If you've ever had that feeling, you're going to be able to relate to this next part, because that is the entire content and topic of this next verse. And there's some good news for you. So back to the story. Paul's addressing the Gentiles and reminding them they were separated. Did you catch that? He's reminding them that they were separated. Verse 13. But now, in Christ Jesus, you who once were far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility. You guys, this was huge. I know this is hard to wrap our minds around 2,000 years later, but just for a second, think about these words. There is no more separation. What Paul was saying is through what Christ accomplished on the cross and everything that was accomplished that day, the dividing wall between Jews and Gentiles had been demolished. There is no more separation. This was groundbreaking, you guys. Think about the kind of news this had to have been back then. Because especially for the Gentiles, you are now included in God's redemptive plan. Christ, it's amazing because Christ's death, we talk about this all the time, it not only reconciled humanity, you and me, to God, but it also reconciled Jews and Gentiles to each other, creating this unified humanity. I mean, this is amazing. So the book of Ephesians was written after the book of Romans. And I will tell you this, if you want a director's cut on, because this didn't go well. Like I talk about Mean Girls, holy cow. If you want the director's cut of what happened with this situation, read the book of Romans, because the Jewish people, they got upset. They took their pride in being, we are the select group of people, God's chosen people. And now Paul is saying, no. Through the cross, through what Christ did, there is no more two groups of people. You are one. And that's not all. That's not all. There's more. I love the language here that Paul chose because this is very intentional. How many people have ever seen a Marvel movie? Really? Wow, that's interesting. Okay. It was about 40% for those of you guys who weren't looking around. So in Marvel movies, they're famous for these little Easter eggs. So like you'll be watching a Marvel movie. I think this is the same in Harry Potter, but I've never seen Harry Potter. So there's these little Easter eggs that refer back to things in other movies. Well, Paul put an Easter egg in here. And I want to show you this. Verse 13, Paul says, you who once were far away have been brought near. Like, we don't think anything of that, honestly. But if you are a Jewish person back then, your radar is going off. You've heard that somewhere before. The book of Isaiah heard God say this, peace, peace, to the far and to the near. What this meant in the Jewish culture, this was a big deal because what this meant was that when the rabbis spoke about converting a convert into Judaism, they said that that person had been brought near. Those who had been far from God were brought near, and now that door was shut to nobody. And I love how Paul brings that point home. I mean, he could have chosen anything, but in the original language, it's the exact same phrasing. There is no more separation. Everybody can be brought near. And the Jewish people, I have to believe, the Jewish people listening to this letter, they knew that. They knew that. So Paul continues, Ephesians 2:15, by setting aside in his flesh the law with its commands and regulations, His purpose was to create in himself one new humanity out of the two, thus making peace, and in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. Are you seeing a pattern here in this part of the letter? As we've discussed, by his death, Christ ended this angry resentment between the Jews and the Gentiles caused by these Jewish laws that really favored the Jews and excluded the Gentiles. Christ died to abolish that whole system of Jewish laws. I think today we talk about that all the power that was in the cross and forgiveness of our sins, which yes, is a big deal, not underpinning that at all. But what I'm saying is back then, it might have even been a bigger deal for the Gentiles because they said, you're now included. He took the two groups that were opposed to one another and made them parts of himself. He called it one new humanity. So it just means that Christ made a single entity or person out of the two. He fused all the believers together. He continues on in verse 2:17. He came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. For through him, we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. Let me read that again. He came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. You ever wonder about that? Why? We've talked about the Gentiles quite a bit. It's obvious that they needed peace, right? They were excluded. They were far away. Why do the Jewish people need peace? That's interesting. Because the Jews, it's interesting, they were near to God because they already knew of him. They had their scriptures. They had their religious ceremonies. The Gentiles were far off because they didn't know anything about God. They knew little about all of these rules. But interestingly enough, neither group could be saved by good works. Neither group could be saved by knowledge. Both of these groups now had one, at least one thing in common, that they both needed to hear about salvation through Christ. Both Jews and Gentiles are able to come to God through Christ. Isn't that amazing? You think about that for a second. What a big deal that was. So Paul concludes with his powerful image of the church. Ephesians 2:19. Consequently, everything I've said, consequently, you are no longer foreigners. You are no longer strangers, but you're now fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. All of that strong language that he used in the beginning, saying stranger, foreigner, outsider. Do you think that Paul chose his words intentionally? I have to believe. These are such strong words. You are no longer foreigners. You're no longer strangers. You're fellow citizens, members of his household. If we go back to my Mean Girls analogy, what happens at the end of every one of these movies? The person is now sitting in a table with a group of people, and it doesn't matter what group of people it is, if it's the plastics or whatever it is, the end of the story is that group of people, or that person is now sitting in a group of people. That is community, and I think that's what Paul's trying to get at here. You were once outsiders. You were once strangers. You were once foreigners. Not anymore. You are now sitting at the table with your community. Absolutely huge. We've all heard the church, you know, we talked about this a lot, that a lot of us refer to the church as a building, but as we've said so many times from the front, it's not a building, it's a group of people. And what Paul is saying in this last part of this verse is that Christ lives in us and shows himself to a world that is watching. I know our culture is a little bit different than it was even 10 years ago, but if you ask me the question, is the world watching the church? Let me give you a spoiler. Yes. Yes. They are watching how you talk, how you treat your spouse, how you work during the day, what you do on your off hours, The world is watching. And I think that's what Paul is saying here at the end. This was such a significant moment for the Gentiles. They are now included in the promises of God. Okay, I get it. The Gentiles are now included. Thank you. What does this have to do with me? That is a great question. Thank you for asking. As I prepared this, I've really taken a hard look at myself, because I've been asking myself one question, and it's the question that I want to ask all of you today. How do we let those people in that we don't agree with? I'm sure there's people in your life that they don't talk the same way as you do. They have a different worldview than you do. They may look different. They may act different. How do you let those people in? And honestly, that's a really big question. And I heard this story 2 weeks ago when I was preparing for this, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I want to share this story with you. There's a historical author, her name is Rita Snowden, and she tells a story from World War II. She tells the story that there was a situation that happened in France, and there were some soldiers that came with their sergeant, and they came up to a cemetery, much like this one, and they were carrying the body of one of their fallen comrades with them. And they needed just to have this person buried before they went out of town. The priest came up to the fence, and he told them gently that he had to ask them a question. And he asked them if their fallen comrade had been a baptized member of the Roman Catholic Church. As you can imagine, as Rita tells the story, the soldiers looked at one another, and they said, I don't know. The priest said that he was really sorry, but in this case, he could not permit burial inside his cemetery. As you can imagine, the soldiers took their fallen comrade, they went outside the fence, and they found a little spot that they could disturb. They dug a hole, and they buried their fallen comrade. They went back to their place of lodging, and then they were heading out of town the next day, but they said, we need to go check on that grave to make sure nothing happened to it, because this is our fallen comrade that we love. So the next day, the soldiers came back to see the grave. Grave was gone. They started looking around because they disturbed this dirt. It's hard to hide disturbed dirt. They started looking around, and they could find no signs of this freshly dug soil. And so they looked at each other, and it's just as they were about to leave in bewilderment, the priest walks up to him, and he had a confession. He said that his heart had been troubled the night before because of his refusal to allow their dead comrade to be buried in the churchyard. So he confessed to him. He said, late that night, he got up and he spent all night, and with his own hands, he moved the fence to include the body of the soldier who had died for France. He moved the fence. That's what love can do. Rules and regulation put up the fence, but love moved it. Jesus, what he did on the cross is he removed the fences between these two groups of individuals, because he abolished the religion that was founded on rules and regulations, and he brought to everybody this religion that is based on love rather than rules and regulations. It makes me wonder. This is the question that I've been asking myself for the last 2 weeks, and this is the question that I want to ask you all today. What fences have I put up? Who am I excluding, either intentionally or unintentionally? If Christ did all that work thousands of years ago, if Christ did all that work thousands of years ago to include both the Jews and the Gentiles, the question becomes, how can I move the fences I've put up to make others feel included? Something to think about.